Welcome to Faithful Fathering's podcast. This is Rick Wirtz, founder and president of Faithful Fathering, and our goal here is to continue the mission of Faithful Fathering, which is simply to encourage and equip dads to be faithful fathers, dads that prioritize physical presence, are engaged emotionally, and lead spiritually by example. The vision for dads individually is to encourage and equip dads to engage in raising a godly generation. On the corporate level, we work with lay leadership teams of faithful fathers to raise the bar for fathering on the fathering front in the church. So that's what we're about, and this particular podcast, we're talking about marriage and family with Mike Rosas.
Yes, sir. We are here in the studio with the man, the myth, the legend, Rick Wirtz. Over two decades of leading the charge, faithful fathering. I love your tagline, dads becoming heroes. Growing up, I always saw my dad as a hero. And so my heart hurts thinking about the families that maybe don't see their dad in that same manner because TV or media or culture has created a different paradigm that is not true. So I love the fact that your heart is to empower dads and to position them to be all that God created them to be. So I'm excited to jump into this podcast. And so the question the audience wants to know, why faithful fathering?
Well, Mike, the culture is on the attack against dads and against family. And it's a tough one because at the end of the day, we've kind of created this culture.
Yeah.
You know, we have the state of fathering and family arguably caused a lot of the cultural issues we're facing because with marriages failing nearly half the time, with 40% of our kids growing up in homes without their dad present, there's a lot of confusion out there on what a healthy relationship looks like. What does a healthy marriage look like?
Yeah.
And so that there's a good chunk of the population is absolutely missing out on understanding the role a man and a woman play in a home to provide guidance through what the world throws at us.
No, 100%. And I think it's that understanding of giving the scene, right, for where we're trying to take men, positioning them to understand not only their calling, but also appreciating them. I think a lot of times men as dads don't receive the appreciation they deserve, when in reality they're juggling countless things to try to lead their family, like you said, in a culture that is completely against them. So so I appreciate you for leading the charge in this because it has been powerful. So, I guess the question begs to be asked, how is the culture attacking dads in the nuclear family?
Well, one way is just simply through the media. Mm-hmm. You know, we've come a long ways from the 1960s series, Father Knows Best.
Yeah.
We've kind of moved into Dads Don't Know Flip.
Wow.
Because we're projected as either bubbling idiots at best, or at worst, we're just checked out and absent.
Mm-hmm.
And dads are determined to not even be available, not be necessary in the home. And this isn't solely an attack on dads. It's actually an attack on the nuclear family.
Yeah.
Because faithful fathering advocates for dads to lead the way in reestablishing the home as the foundational education center for our children.
Yeah.
And the foundational education is really what a healthy relationship looks like, that day-to-day example that dad and mom provide in how they interact and how they lead the family, in discipline, in conversation, in guidance throughout each and every day. It's a day-to-day schooling, if you will, on parenting and healthy relationship. And of course, the other angle is across our nation, there are an attack on just the basics. You can't call them mom and dad anymore.
Yeah.
It's parent one and parent two. And at one level, this is just a discount of the basic biology of a man and woman coming together and uniting as one and creating a child, right? That's one level. But on another level, it just absolutely discounts God's design. They throw in that whole idea that it produces a confusion on basic sexuality in a culture that's hypersexualized.
Yeah.
So if anything else, we need a grounding, a basis for which to operate. And of course, that basis is He created them. male and female. That's Genesis 1:27. So that's the grounding, and that's God's design for the nuclear family, to have man and woman, mom and dad, very present. And finally, it is easy to point fingers at legislation or at the culture. But, you know, when you point fingers, there's always three fingers pointing back.
Yes.
And those fingers are, marriages with children failing nearly half the time, divorce. Another one is cohabitation and having children out of wedlock. And a third is single moms raising children with no interest in marriage.
Mm-hmm. I heard a leader of an African nation say, the revolution of a nation is done through education. And so we might think, oh, is it really that big a deal to change the understanding of terms, be it father, be it mother? Well, the reality is that's what the king in the Old Testament tried to shift in Daniel's life. He tried to change him and his three friends' lives by changing their names, because there was this declaration of their lives that was different from what they were meant to be. And it's the same thing whenever a culture tries to re-educate. What they're trying to do is trying to displace what was past known and try to create a new understanding. And that's what causes overall change. So I love the fact of sticking to the great designer's manual. And I think anytime a culture tries to take away design, it's really because they're trying to take away the designer. And so it's important for us to understand and to, go to bat for those things. So, I guess one of my questions, what encouragement do you have for those that are divorced, cohabitating, or trying to raise kids as a single parent? Because it's not easy.
Absolutely, Mike. And, the challenge, back to your point, that you change the design, you change the commitment to marriage, and you do have generational consequences.
You do.
And that's just the reality of the deal. But in understanding the challenges that these situations face, I always like to first go to Romans 3:23 that says that we all fall short of the glory of God. All right. So I don't want to, there's no judgment here at all. I just want to encourage that when we do fall short of God's design, and it's a tough one to live up to, but that doesn't mean we discount the design, as you said.
Exactly.
We live into that design, try to walk a little bit more in line and in sync with where the Lord has us. For those divorced, the challenges are many, and my encouragement is always to keep it simple, not unlike Samson in Judges 15, where he started where he was, used what he had, and he did what he could, which in his situation was to pick up the jawbone of an ass and kill 1,000 Philistines.
Sure.
While in divorce, you may feel like you have some of those energies of wanting to step into situations, but your job is to start where you are, which, just like Samson, is not necessarily where you want to be, and use what you have, which of course is the love for your children and the desire to be the influence you want to be in their lives. So what can you do with that? Well, the first step, of course, is probably the toughest, and that is that you have to learn to love the mother of your children.
Yeah.
In a situation that isn't necessarily always that lovable. But you have to make that decision to honor her, love in a way that honors her and her role in raising your children separate from you. And so how do you step into that? Well, you just make sure that you're not making sarcastic comments, not degrading the mother of your children, and particularly in front of your children. Just keep all those comments and things to yourself. Always honor her. Show that love in a way that honors the mother of your children. Secondly is to stay in your lane. Don't extend yourself beyond, financially or practically. Your key role as a dad is to invest the time in your child's life.
Yes. And so, one of my favorite Rick Wirtz quotes is, how do you spell love? T-I-M-E. And as a father of three, I can't tell you how many times that has proved to be true in me and my family's life. So I love it, Rick. This is such great wealth for, for fathers in every stage. And, the reality is there are fathers in every stage. We love you and we'll meet you where you're at. But Faithful Fathering is going to teach you the truth, how to make what situation you're in the best. And you always go back to the designer's manual.
Absolutely. And that, you know, as you explain, you know, like I said, if your children are not of age to explain why a divorce has happened, then we have to, you have to say, listen, I will tell you when it is appropriate, when it is age appropriate, we'll discuss the whole story. Just let them know that. But the two key issues are, number one is to absolve any blame the children are carrying themselves on the divorce. Just absolutely do your best to absolve that. I don't know that it can be done completely because that's just a kid's nature. But secondly, is to enjoy these conversations as opportunities to help them understand you're not perfect. You know, if they're teenagers, they already know that. But if they're younger, yes, they need to hear that from you, because these conversations open the door to tremendous opportunities to talk about how you're pointing the way to the perfect father, so that he can fill the gaps, yes, that this divorce may have created in their lives.
So good. So good. I love it.
If you're cohabitating and having children out of wedlock, I encourage you to stop and ask yourself some pretty tough questions. Number one is, how did you get here? What encouraged you to justify this lifestyle? Is there a history of divorce or general disrespect for women in your family? What are the benefits this lifestyle offers your children? And once you know where you are and have gained some insights on how you got there, then you can begin to identify, you know, what you have and what you can do.
I think that's so true. Every friend I've had who is cohabitating, at 100% have stated the exact same reason. Well, I don't want to end up like so-and-so that got divorced. I don't want to end up like my parents that hated each other and got divorced. And so it's more out of fear that they cohabitate rather than love. But the reality is, in this whole situation, is that when you cohabitate, the percentage of you getting into divorce is over 60%.
Absolutely. And that's the reality. That's why it's so important to evaluate how we got here.
Exactly.
And now,
what's the root?
And now look at what you have. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have love for the mother of your children, right, and you have love for your children. So what can you do with that? Well, you can look for a local church. Begin to ask about premarital counseling. Mm-hmm. Ask about parenting, you know, family counseling as well, and then take that step to advance and mature into the marriage relationship that you're really already in. You just are trying to protect yourself from something that you can't protect yourself from.
And you think you're receiving all the benefits, but the reality is, in marriage, the greatest benefit is having the blessing of the Father upon your marriage.
Absolutely. So you want to walk into that and establish, you know, the outcome, of course, is to establish that healthy and healthful and happy marriage and family,
yes,
that, again, sets the children up for success. Hmm. Finally, I do want to address the single mom. I'm from a family with a lot of divorces, and I always am amazed at how moms try to be mom and dad.
Yeah.
And so, again, recognizing where you are, obviously you may or may not be where you want to be, but the fact that you're committing to raise a child on your own, and maybe you've turned from marriage as a concept altogether, you start there, where you are. What do you have? You have a tremendous love for your child, again, and you have the fact that you're a mom. You're uniquely qualified, mm-hmm, to be a mother. And that, just one basic area is the oxytocin that you produce. It's the love hormone that you produce in a way that dads can't even get close to.
Yeah.
And your interaction as a mom helps a child develop their own ability to regulate their oxytocin levels in their life. And as they mature, that actually is by God's design, is how kids navigate through stressful situations later in life. So the goal is to be the mom. So, you know, what you have, where you are, what you have is love and a unique motherhood. What you can do is be the best mom you can be.
Yeah, I love that.
Turn to dads. If the dad of the child is not involved, look to your church, look to relatives to find father figures that you can trust that will help fill the fathering void. And so, again, moms just focusing on being the best mom they can be. Don't try to be mom and dad because you'll end up not doing either as well as you can. And the same goes for a single dad raising children.
Yeah.
Just focus on being the best dad you can be. Dads produce what's called vasopressin, the aggressive hormone that protects a child later on. And he has that fight or flight reaction is thanks to dad. Yeah. And again, so dads can't be moms. We look for those mother figures through the church, through a sister, through whatever opportunities you have to step in and fill that mothering void. So those are the things that, you know, whether it's a divorce situation, a cohabitation issue, or a single mom, those are the areas that we really have to watch out when we realize that we have to take responsibility for the impact that the way the devil has destroyed the family in many aspects has set the culture up to turn on the nuclear family as it has.
Now, and I really love that, Rick, because it's a very overwhelming solution, and you almost see it as impossible. But these steps and tips you gave are poignant, pragmatic steps that you can take to better your situation today. It's not in this, you know, la-la land, if things work out perfectly. No, it's what can I do today? So now, let me paint this picture. From somebody who's on the outside looking in, they could say, so is your position that marriage will heal all of society's woes?
It would be irresponsible of me to suggest that just because you're married to the mother of your children that all the society woes will go away and the pressures on the kids would dissipate as well. But the reality of the deal is that the studies have shown in two-parent homes, in the nuclear family, kids are more likely to graduate from high school. They are more likely to steer clear of drug and alcohol abuse. They are more likely to wait until marriage to have children. And in general, they're just more likely to feel comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah, and you know, I saw a report saying that over 90% of school shooters were fatherless. They had no father in the home to really direct and show the way a life should be done. I'm not saying that's the primary cause, but you can't tell me it didn't affect the situation.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, there are no magic pills, but what I do know is that in marriage, as we stay in that design that God has established in Genesis, from Genesis all the way through, that we are to be married, one man, one woman. And in that design, again, if you look at what Samson's model, the simple model to start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. Where you are in marriage is the perfect model that is the design of God. You're standing there. Your marriage is the closest thing that you'll experience in the flesh to a relationship with Jesus the Christ. So that's where you are. Now, what can you, you know, what do you have? Well, you have the power of the resurrected Christ, you have the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, and you have the Heavenly Father right beside you. So you have all the strength that God has instilled in you as a Christian to move forward. Husbands are charged to love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So what you can do is to learn to love as Christ loves. Yeah. And that means sacrificially and selflessly. It's been said that once you realize that you're supposed to die for your wife, everything else kind of falls into place.
Yes.
And that's where
so true.
The common hurdle, though, for men is to move that love as a noun to a verb, to make that intentional decision to love. That's why Ephesians charges men to love your wives. So that is an intentional choice, an intentional decision that we have to move forward with. And the best definition of love, of course, is from 1 Corinthians 13 that says, you know, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it's not proud, it does not dishonor others, it's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails.
Amen.
A man that learns to love and commit to love. When a man learns to love and commits to love, marriages thrive, and you start to see a godly generation raised up. And that's when we start to turn the culture right side up.
I love that. I love that. So good. Well, dads, future dads, and anybody connected to dads, we hope you enjoyed this session of Faithful Fathering. This is our podcast that helps dads become heroes. Rick, any final words?
Just faithful fathers learn to love as Christ loves in marriage and family. And that's the dad you're called to be, and that's the dad the next generation needs.
Until next time, we'll see you then.